Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is Second Contact, a Star Trek Lower Decks commentary podcast. My name is Charlene Schmidt. I'm one of your co-hosts, and the other co-host of this podcast is...
Tristan Riddell.
Tristan Riddell. Boy, have we got a treat today.
Crisis Point 2, Paradoxus.
There it is. Yes, we are getting the sequel to Crisis Point, and oh my gosh, this thing... I said off camera, it's like coming home. This is just such classic Lower Decks for me. I just want to eat it. Mm.
We're not going to do that whole thing where we're coy at the beginning and say like, oh, I wonder how we feel about it. No, it was awesome. Let's talk about it.
Yep. Nope. We like this one a lot. We're going to have so much to talk about. And I think before we even get started, let's make a pact to not point out, like we could do a whole roll call of references that they're making to other things in Star Trek in this episode, and that could be the whole commentary track. Let's not do that because it's going to be too much.
But it's going to happen a little bit.
A little bit, but let's be judicious. That's what I'm trying
to... There we go, yeah.
That's the ground rule I'm trying to lay down. Okay. So if you don't know about what this podcast is, we do a commentary to an episode of Lower Decks, and today is Season 3, Episode 8. You can watch along with us. You can queue up however you watch Lower Decks after the Star Trek screen where the Cerritos swirls by. Stop once you hit the black screen, and then I'll count everybody down. We'll go 3, 2, 1, play. We can watch it together, or if you're just listening, cool. Do that.
All right.
So,
everybody ready?
Are you ready? Let's just dive in. Let's go.
Let's do it.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, play.
I'm so happy that I get to watch this again. Yeah, right, like, boom.
Yeah, boom. We're in the middle of the action. We are wasting no time.
It's interesting because I didn't notice this right off the bat. I didn't notice it until after the opening credits that we're already in anamorphic widescreen.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I was also talking with a friend this morning about the movie filter and how it's so good.
Yeah.
To give it that cinematic quality. But you know what? And I know like many people in the Nerd Party are disappointed in me right now because there's massive screen resolution size junkies. And I didn't even notice that part. I was too busy absorbing all of the things happening in this episode. It's just so much.
But that's the thing that is just, if you're not that big of a film nerd, it doesn't matter. But if you are a big film nerd, it makes all the difference because it's like the blacks are crushed. They're like, it's much, there's much more contrast. The reds kind of are pop a little bit more. You have film grain.
Absolutely.
You also have film scratches.
Uh-huh.
And on top of that, you also have cigarette burns, which is
that's one of my favorite touches.
I know, like in the corner of the screen, that's when it pops up for when you're supposed to change reels.
Yeah.
And it happens, I think, at every act. So like there's three acts in this episode, and so it happens at the end of every act.
It's
and there's
so
also
perfect.
Halation, which is insane.
Oh.
And
for people who don't know what that is, can you explain it?
Well, it's kind of like it's when there's like a little bit of glow and discoloration on the edges of the subject. And like Google it, you can see the examples because it would take too long. That's the bare bones definition of halation. There's
okay.
way more into it and way more reasoning, but that's kind of what it is that like when you shoot on film, the edge work sometimes, especially if you zoom in, can be a little glowy and have like some blues
okay.
and some pinks and things like that.
Okay. So that's what that is. Thank you. And while we're talking about this, let's talk a little more about the film effect. How do you think they achieve that? Like, is it a combination of things like effects and filters?
It's all done in post. I mean, like this since this is an animated project, I mean, everything is just filters that you add in post in your nonlinear editing system or your online color system. Yeah.
Okay.
Uh, but it's just, it's so perfect. And also the lens flares, you see way lens more flares. Lens flares.
Freaking lens flares. It's not complete without the lens flares.
Now, I love these Romulan triplets. I want to see them outside of the holodeck so bad.
Hey, you never know. This is Lower Decks. Anything can happen.
It's like it's their version of Lursa and Beator.
I was just about to say it.
They're sisters. They got an intense window cleavage.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can't miss that. That was definitely what they were referring to. There's all sorts of subtle references like that.
Also, these uniforms aren't First Contact uniforms. They're a blending of Lower Decks and First Contact uniforms.
Yes, and you know what? I love them. I might even like them more than the Lower Decks regular uniforms.
I feel like this is a really great halfway point between the two, and it makes me wonder, like, okay, so did Boimler come up with these? Or is this something that Starfleet is rolling out so that everyone has the same? Like, they're phasing out FC uniforms, and maybe Cali classes are going to get... Maybe they're all trying to be a little bit more uniform across the board, but then you have Picard that comes in later on, so it's...
Starfleet uniform designers are just so busy coming up with all of these variations and then changing it up entirely every, like, what, 1.5 years, something like
that. Oh my gosh, it's insane.
It's insane. We have so many variations. Like, I'm not mad about it because it makes the cosplay super fun. You know, you go to any convention and there's going to be 40 different variations of the Starfleet uniform, and they're all amazing.
I love that. She calls it the Vindictiverse, and she relates it back to, like, when she's talking about time travel. I mean, we're all getting 2009 Star Trek vibes, and Tendi, of course, is going, yeah, that's a little bit of a scientific reach. You know, it's just so funny.
Yes, it's very self-aware of this Trek universe. It's pretty funny.
I love the idea that they're watching the opening credits in a holodeck. They're sitting down in a starfield to watch it.
That's exactly what I was going to say, is they're actually watching the opening credits. And it's, I think, maybe one of my very favorite parts of this whole episode is that they do that.
It's so funny.
So good.
And so when Boimler came in and was clearly dejected, what did you think happened?
I had no idea. Like, did one of his parents die?
That was the first thing in my brain, was that one of his parents died or something.
I was actually getting kind of mad at Mariner because, read the room, Boimes is in trouble. Give the man a hug. Now, okay, this is just so cool. The Star Trek II Regulus Station, they have basically done an exact replica of it with a younger and longer haired Carol Marcus type.
It's clearly a Carol Marcus stand-in. Yeah.
It's a Carol Marcus type. Yes.
Boimler good. Clearly has a type. If you look at her,
he likes
and
blondes.
Then you look at the woman at the raisin at the orchard, not the orchard, the vineyard, and then also the first girlfriend that we see.
His
girlfriend,
blondes.
They're all blonde and pretty faces and everything. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I loved Rutherford's comment about the graphics. They're so cool.
They did
because in 1982, ILM killed it with those graphics for Star Trek II.
This is very Wrath of Khan. It even has like super scratchy film stock for the Top Secret logo.
It was so good.
Yeah. See, I not to go back to the uniforms, but honestly, like, this is like, this would be such a great rollout if this is what they wore on starships other than Cali class. Like, it's kind of like how we had Deep Space Nine and TNG, like, you had station uniforms, you had starship uniforms.
Yeah.
And maybe we'd see that, it doesn't matter because Star Trek has given up all sense of continuity when it comes to uniforms.
Yeah, it does not make sense anymore. It doesn't have to make sense. It's just going to be what it's going to be. Go with it. Like, do you wear the same clothes every single day? Most of us don't.
Right, exactly.
Uniform or not. I wonder if Mariner has a little bit of a crush on Carol Marcus stand in here. She's so hot. Why'd you make her so hot if you're not interested?
I get it's more of a, I don't think she has a crush on her. I think it's just a frustration with Boimler. And I also think, and we've seen this before, I think Mariner has not a crush on Boimler, but a possessiveness over Boimler.
Where I agree with that.
I'm trying to explain it where it's not necessarily sexual, romantic, but I've had this with friends before where they're not interested in me. Oh, I mean, this was long ago before I was married, but like they weren't interested in me, but they were jealous of me when I got a girlfriend of the girlfriend kind of thing. Like it was a weird dynamic.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. It's kind of like that protectiveness. Like, I don't want to see you get hurt kind of concern.
Oh, I wouldn't even say protectiveness. It's this weird sense of jealousy and ownership. It's something like, not as extreme as ownership. Like, don't take me too literal here, but I was so frustrated with Mariner on this one. I'm just like, no, go on the crab chase. That looks awesome. For a second, I thought we weren't going to see it. I thought we were not going to see Tendi and Rutherford ever again. I thought that was done. And I'm so glad that I was wrong.
Oh, totally, right? Especially with how it all plays out. Like, this is really supposed to be Bradward's big adventure, his exploration of self-discovery, and the way Mariner's crisis point was a revelation for her. This is for Boimler, but really, Tendi steals the show, does she not?
As she always does.
Look, I am not mad about it either. I loved that moment. I can totally see her as a Starfleet captain. And if that's what she's going for, go, 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 go. I'm cheering you on.
And Link, I mean, I know this is bad podcasting, but this shot right here, like when she flies over the explosion in slow motion, it's very reminiscent of when she knee kicks that dude in the previous episodes.
It totally is, because it slows down a little bit and then cut to back to speed.
It's so, you can tell that the writers and the producers have a soft spot for Tendi.
Maybe they do. They want to see her kicking some ass.
Yeah.
So they're going to just flourish with that whenever they possibly can. And it makes perfect sense. Like, I was wondering, why was Tendi taking this simulation so seriously? Like, come on, relax a little, have fun. She would usually be the one to say that, but it's the whole captain thing. Like, this is practice for her.
Right.
Now it makes sense.
And I like that they kept showing stuff that we hadn't heard of before. Like within Starfleet, it wasn't like that only happened once, like towards the end, like when we saw the founding of the Federation, which we saw at the end of Enterprise.
Yeah.
But I like that it was something we hadn't seen before. And they even mentioned it towards the end. They're like, what does this have to do with the squids? And they're like, I think they're abandoning that.
Yeah. One of my favorite things about this episode is Mariner. Well, actually, not just Mariner, but calling out all sorts of like movie and Trek tropes, like, oh, this was the third act twist. Okay, yeah, we know how this goes and blah, blah, blah. I don't know why, but I got a complete kick out of that just because it's like, it's like every film critic, you know?
Well, it's the beauty of these type of episodes, like what we got with the original Crisis Point, is that it's self-referential in its tropes, which is very much a Lower Decks thing, but this is specific to the movies, not just Star Trek overall.
Yeah, that's true. And it's just very self-aware. It's calling itself out. I have an appreciation for that for some reason. It just really works for me.
Read my saggy skin.
Oh my gosh.
I love Nick-Nack. I want to see Nick-Nack again. I love that he pops up later and that runs across the screen and says, I'm Nick-Nack.
A cool idea. They need to make a Nick-Nack action figure that has like kind of like saggy skin that you can bunch together or pull out as you desire.
Nick-Nack's the character in the robe.
Back
to what you were trying to say, good lord, no, I don't want a saggy skinned action figure. What is wrong with you?
Oh, come on. I think if I were a kid playing with that action figure, it's kind of gross, so that's what makes it fun. But I don't think that'll happen. This is probably a one-off character, and that's fine.
Okay, for those of you watching, please pay attention to this. For those of you not watching and just listening, she literally walks over the anamorphic frame to get out of the holodeck. I cheered. I was by myself. I cheered and clapped my hands when that happened. because that's freaking hilarious. She stepped over the anamorphic mat.
We have never seen that before, have we?
No, it's hilarious.
It's this noticeable touch just because it hasn't happened before. It's pretty cool.
So William Boimler, KIA, as far KIA. As we know.
Right. Or is he?
Or is he? Dun, dun, dun.
When we get to that point, I really want to know your thoughts.
With this scene, like when they said like it was like a freak nerve gas accident or something like that, I was just like, that's a stupid ass way to go in Star Trek.
It's not heroic. Like,
it's not even that. It's just there should be like 15 failsafe, you know, things right. on a starship to prevent that from happening, especially on the Titan.
Yeah. You'd think they would have some sort of monitoring thing in the environmental systems. Like, heck, we have carbon monoxide and smoke detectors in our houses. Come on.
Yeah. And so when that happened, I was just like, that seems fishy. And there's a reason why.
Yes. Yeah, I guess that's our first clue. I love the punks so much. We have the Kirk Thatcher with the boombox and the other gang here of criminal punks.
And I'm pretty sure that blue-haired punk was a reference to Rick from Rick and Morty.
Oh, probably. Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. Because as we all know that McMahon used to write on Rick and Morty.
That's right. That's right. This show and that show get compared all the time as to whether or not Lower Decks is being too Rick and Morty or if it's just enough.
I don't see it, honestly. I don't see Lower Decks as being Rick and Morty. Maybe with the rhythm of the language is kind of Rick and Morty, but that's as far as it goes for me. And I'm a huge Rick and Morty fan. I'm a huge Lower Decks fan, and I don't think it's...
I think people read into that too much. Just because McMahon worked on both shows, because they're both animated, that doesn't make them the same thing.
Yeah.
And a lot of animation has a little bit.
A
lot of animation has these shared styles where it's fast-paced, fast-talking, that sort of a thing. That does not mean this is a clone of Rick and Morty, just Star Trek.
So Boimler has bags under his eyes. Like, how much time has passed?
I don't know. Has he exhausted himself in a matter of, I don't know, I want to say not even hours. Or has he been crying?
Maybe his eyes
are a little puffy. I think that's what they're going for, actually. Come to think of it.
And he does have, he has to go to the sick bay because of dehydration. So maybe they are in there all day, you know?
Maybe.
Because that's the thing. Like, when you're playing this kind of story, it's not going to be 2 hours like watching a movie. I mean, if you're going to be playing it, this feels like an all-day thing. Like, you're going through it in order to experience the story. It's kind of like a video game where, like, you'll play for 8 hours easily.
Right, which I'm sure makes booking holodeck time a little difficult just because you're booking such large bricks of time.
Mm-hmm. Knick-knack!
There he is! I love how he calls Boimler Purplehead. That's my new nickname for Boimler. I like Boims, but Purplehead is good too.
I think Boims is mine.
You can't beat Boims. But I don't know, the whole thing, like the emphasis on his purple hair this season just makes that click.
Now, what did we find out about his purple hair? This was a couple episodes ago.
He dyes his hair purple. Yeah, it's not naturally purple. We still don't know his natural hair color, which I hope someday we'll find out. Just for kicks and giggles.
I love that Mariner referred to this as the Kirk way, where he just starts beating the acolyte instead of trying to reason with him.
That's right. I'm going to punch it.
And we get another Kirk reference later on.
Yes, we do. Yes, we have so many references in this episode. I'm going to have to watch it a few times just to absorb every little detail they put in here. This is because it's a lot. It's a lot.
I got super excited when we got to the founding of the Federation. I really thought that we were going to get like a close-up of T'Pol or have an interaction with Archer, something like
that. Right. I wondered, like, is this going to be Enterprise's moment to cameo on Lower Decks?
Right? This would have been the perfect time to get an Enterprise cameo.
Yeah.
Like, have them come back.
we shouldn't have gotten our hopes up just because there's been a little bit of talk about that recently in interviews. And they said, yeah, we'd love to.
Right.
We'd love to. It doesn't mean, oh, hang on. Just keep watching. No, it's, well, we'd love to. Oh, okay. So it's not happening. Fine.
Also, the bomb is the same shape as the Nemesis bomb.
Yes, it is.
With the Romulans and whatnot and everything like that. Which makes sense since they're Romulans.
Right? Yeah.
Rutherford's such a tool in this episode.
He kind of is, isn't he?
Like, even from a gaming perspective, like, if you were playing this or doing this, like, you, this would totally be the guy that would be kicked out of D&D for not taking it serious enough.
Probably. Yeah, and he's usually not like this, though. Like, he's embraced the adventure. He's having fun. Mm-hmm. He's not taking it seriously for a change. Otherwise, he's usually a little more serious than Tendi, even.
I think it was definitely, they were showing how serious Tendi was being, and they were showing how how loose Rutherford was being to kind of show that contrast and to make, to drive the point home.
Yeah. Yeah. They were exaggerating it a bit. I really love the reverse sound effect. Just, it, sounds it's like probably not the tape, real thing, you know, it just sounds great though. However they made that. And once again, the Ritos just getting bombarded by the Romulans.
And once again, people are tossing phasers like they aren't violent guns. You know I have a thing about this.
Absolutely. Yeah, but it's true. They're dangerous weapons, dang it.
People just toss them around like they're Playmates toys.
They're not toys. They're not the Playmates toys.
I do love that he enters the room, and when he shoots someone, he's like, Timba! I'm going to start doing that.
That was so good. I love Kayshawn so much.
Kayshawn's great.
He hasn't had a whole lot to do this season, but it's been nice to know that he's around. He's not gone.
Well, I think he's had as much time on screen as Shax or even Freeman, I think. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but...
Well, maybe, I don't know, Shax maybe has a little more than him, but yeah, it's not like he, I mean, it's not like he's the Lieutenant J where he gets to say nothing at all.
That's true. So this is where I'm going to use my chip to talk about references. So they're flying to the planet Shatnari.
Yes.
Shatner. This is this planet is very reminiscent of Star Trek V, the Final Frontier. There's a godlike character, Shakari, but it's Shatner, you know, like, and there's a godlike character.
This is like the God Rock.
Right. And like, there was supposed to be rock monsters in Star Trek V, but then they were cut. And this is one big Star Trek V love fest.
It really is. And it actually gives a little bit of cred to Star Trek V, I think. Just, I don't know. They do this so freaking well. The one thing that I think is missing and that I was waiting for was the whole, excuse me, I have one question. And what does God need with a blank?
Yeah, Mariner.
But it didn't happen.
But however, though, Mariner does play that character because she's the one who says, like, hey, there, you know, like, this is, she's like, there's always a catch with these godlike characters. And she's just, they're just a cheesy quote generator. Yeah.
Basically. Yeah. She knows what's up. She's encountered these things before. She knows it all.
I love the fact that he goes in because I had no idea what was going to happen. But then,
right? I didn't know what he was doing here.
The reveal of the Kitty Hawk instead of V'ger and Voyager.
Right. Oh my gosh. Such a great little thing.
Truly inspired. This is inspired work.
It is. Like, honestly, are they pulling from every single one of the movies in this episode?
Absolutely.
What is the Star Trek 6 reference, though?
Hmm.
Because that's the one thing I can't think of. We've got Insurrection. We've got Nemesis. We've got First Contact, Generations, Star Trek 5, 4, 3, maybe not. I'm not sure. No. Definitely 2, and now Motion Picture.
This was great because I had no idea. We're out of Animorphic now. The film grain's gone.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, we're clearly out of it, out of the holodeck. And so I'm like, okay, is this just a different version of the holodeck? Are we in his brain? Did he get sucked up by an actual thing? Whatever.
Dream.
Yeah.
So I really was expecting a William Shatner cameo with the whole...
I was too.
You know, the horse in Idaho set here with the Kirk mailbox. And then it's George Takei. And I'm like, you got me. Well done.
And then Boimler himself says, he's like, oh, Captain Sulu, even better. Like,
right. I like, thought, ooh, they shots fired.
Yeah, that was very much shots fired because mm-hmm. fans right now, especially in the past couple of years, have really been digging on Takei more than Shatner.
Well, yeah, Shatner has had some moments. We'll say that.
We'll say that.
Yeah. We'll say that.
But, I mean, Takei makes everything better when he's
there. He really does. He just brings joy to whatever comes his way, and this is nothing different. I'm just so glad they got him.
Yeah, I'm glad that he was down to be involved.
Yeah, I want to know more about this. I hope there's some behind the scenes that we get about how do they think, oh, he should be the guy who plays this role, or, you know, all of that. What was George Takei's reaction? Did he enjoy this? I want to know everything. I always do.
This is terrifying when the horse bit him. Like, it was straight up vampiric.
I laughed so hard when George Takei said, the horsey's going to bite you now.
Yeah, he said just, horsey.
He said horsey. And it's such a calm demeanor. It was just, okay. Yeah, it was crazy. I enjoyed it so much.
Now, you know, like Dr. Ta'ana said, the holodeck may be fake, but dehydration is real. You know that Beverly said that to Riker at one time. You know.
Definitely. Multiple times. Multiple times. Guys, you got to drink up during your holodeck activities.
Take some Gatorade with you.
Absolutely. Now, this freaking guy who always finds himself in the most horrible of situations. This is not the first time today he's burned himself.
Twice in one day, yeah.
Bruh.
I do like that Boimler gets that validation from Tendi and Rutherford saying like, no. Like, yes, you went through an existential crisis, but we had a lot of fun. Like, this is a good program. This is a good crisis point.
Yeah, exactly. Just say, hey, no, you. What you think was your shit film, it was great. We had a fantastic time. And here we go for the twist. Oh, my.
And this is the reveal. This is the twist. I paused and took a look at this Defiant class ship, and it does not have any writing on it. It does not say Defiant, but it does have a cloak, so one could think that it possibly is the Defiant that Section 31 stole.
Maybe.
And I love that Boimler talks about the comm badges. He's like, should we really advertise who we are?
Yes.
Freaking hate that in Discovery. I hate it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's the biggest discrepancy about Section 31, isn't it? It's like, we don't talk about Section 31 until we do. And we talk about it ad nauseum.
I think I definitely made a joke about that when it was first revealed in Discovery that we showed someone with black badges. Somebody said, like, oh, maybe it's Section 31. That could be cool. And I'm like, there's no way it's Section 31. Why on earth would they have a special badge when it's a secret society?
Yeah, we've probably talked about our issues with Section 31 before, so we can skip that whole rant. But yeah, it's a sore spot for me. So I'm not terribly excited that William Boimler is now Section 31. I don't know. Let's see where it goes.
I think it's going to be interesting. Like, even though I didn't like what Discovery did to Section 31, we're not in Discovery era. You know, we're in...
Yeah.
You know, in like the... And we're in the 24th century. So it should be interesting. It should be much more clandestine than where, you know, like Section 31 puts ads on LinkedIn saying we have dental and you can work remotely.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'm hoping it'll be cool. Just, yeah, I don't know. Once again, I'm a little ambivalent, but that is okay. Still going to watch next week and enjoy the ride.
We'll find out.
And that was the episode. So thank you, everybody, for listening and tuning in. Tristan, where can people find you if they want to talk more Lower Decks with you?
Well, you can find me all over our website at thenerdparty.com. You can find our show page and at there. And you can also find the network on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. You can find me personally on Twitter at TheInsaneRobin.
And you can find me at Oh the Profanity. Next week is episode 9. We are turning the corner to the end. We're getting very close.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.